It's time to embrace your uniqueness here on your Why Wait station. I'm actor Andrew Mondia, coming to you from lovely Kelowna, BC. I love to make people laugh. I love to inspire with my love, light, and laughter. I have been called a social butterfly, as I have traveled and lived around the world, meeting wonderful and inspiring people. I love to inspire to be yourself, to be your own voice, sharing your gifts. Embrace your uniqueness. Let me bring to you a flying inspiration all the way from outside of London, England. I have had the pleasure to meet this lovely lady while living in London. Her story is amazing and what she has done. Her name is Gabriella Guglielminotti Trival. Gabriella was born in Italy and studied foreign languages at the University of Turin, her home city. She is a qualified master practitioner of neurolinguistics programming, NLP, and has traveled around Europe, Asia, Africa, America, and Antarctica. In 2012, she published a book, Antarctica, Odyssey, A New Beginning, about her adventures there. She is an author, speaker, visionary, and female cycle consultant who helps women to gain confidence, authority, and fulfillment in life by knowing better their body. She helps women to make their female cycle their best friend. She also helps couples improve their relationship when the cycle is a problem, finding a more satisfying way to communicate and have better intimacy. Welcome to Embrace Your Uniqueness, Gabriella.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you for having me today. It's so nice to have the opportunity to speak to you again.
And it is very wonderful to have you on here. Now, as the show is about embrace your uniqueness, how have you embraced your uniqueness in your life?
You know what? I was never asked that question before. So I'm really glad. You know, I've been on several shows and they tend to ask you the same thing all the time. I was never asked the question, and it's quite a very good question actually. Well, to answer it, I think what I did, I realized early on that I was different from, let's say, the crowd, even if all of us, you know, we are all unique in our own fashion and ways. But I think since a very early age, I realized that I do things in a different way, or I wasn't doing things that I was taught in the way I was taught, etc. So I think I grew up doing my best to not repress myself too much. Of course, as young humans, we are conditioned by our parents, families, relatives, teachers, etc. It's unavoidable, we know that. But I think I just thought that repressing myself, it wasn't a good thing. Having said that, I have to mention this just for the record. I was born in Italy, a Catholic country, and my parents were kind of very practicing Catholic people. So I think I know a bit about repression. But as I grew up, I realized that it's very important to express what you feel, and if you have a dream or something that comes up for you, even if a series of challenges might come along, and the answer to your questions might be always a no, I think I did my best to always go for it anyway. And yes, of course, the more you grow up and the more you jump into life, you will find different things popping up for you, but I suppose that's life for everybody, really. And so I noticed that if you keep with yourself, within yourself, your sense of identity, it always pays back, because in a way people do like quirkiness, uniqueness, peculiarity, rather than just the usual, the standard. That's why possibly, stories, people's stories are so compelling. We are all intrigued by, and anybody's stories, really. I definitely am, and I'm sure you are as well, Andrew, aren't you?
Oh yeah, I'm very intrigued. Now, I'm glad you mentioned about your Italian back you being from Italy. How I thought Italians, because I'm because my background being having relatives in the Italian part in Switzerland, I thought Italians were more like open and loving. How was it like growing up in Italy and with people like with the Italians accepting people's own individuality?
Well, I think I mentioned my Catholic background that I renounced actually very early on because, yes, I was raised in that way, religious way, because my parents, faith or whatever. But when I was 16 years old, I made them aware that I would stop going to mass and attending this type of events, so simply because they wouldn't do it for me. It just, for me, I felt like a hypocrite, right? So, and I was pretty young, and I still, even if I didn't know how to face these things, but I just simply said it, and that was it. I let them know about my decision, and that was it. Well, okay, you asked me about Italy. To answer your question, I have to go into a generalization. So, it doesn't really, you find obviously very outgoing, outspoken, and loving people all over the world. Having said that, though, different cultures, in different countries, they do tend to have some, aspects. Yes, if we want to, again, do a broad generalization, we can say, yes, possibly Italians, they tend to be more outgoing than possibly British people, having lived almost 18 years in the UK, I can say that. You see, again, there are generalization. My parents, I was born in Turin, which is the northwest. Also, this has to be mentioned because Italy is a very long country. So it means that the people that you might come across in the north part of it, near the mountains, the Alps, are very different from the people you might encounter in Sicily. It simply is just a very broad, long country. So the weather is different, and so obviously it affects the character of people. So I wasn't born in a very Mediterranean part of Italy at all. I was born in Piedmont, and as the word says, it's at the foot of the mountains, of the Alps. So it's a very kind of mountainous place. Actually, very similar possibly to Switzerland.
Oh yeah. Well, Italy is a very beautiful country. And for those that don't know, Italy is also the shape of a boot. And she's talking about the top of the boot. Isn't Turin called? Is that is there? Is it Torino, or is that? Is there a difference between Turin and Torino?
No, in Italian it's Torino, in English it's Turin.
Yeah. So it's Torino, and it's where Torino is where they held the Winter Olympics.
Well, it wasn't in Torino. It was near in the nearby valleys, but yes, it was in 2006. Yes.
Yeah, the host of the Winter Olympics. Anyways, I just wanted to give you, the listeners, an idea of the area where Gabriella came from. What brought you from Italy to England?
Right. Well, what happens was I never planned to move to UK, definitely too far north for me. But what happened was after getting my degree in languages, in foreign languages, I worked for some time as a tour leader and as a rep for a tour operator in Italy, well, several. And so I ended up spending 3 months on a little island in the Maldives. And while I was there, I met a British guy who was there on holiday on his own, and who was also a diver. And as I am a diver as well, when I had some free time, I would go diving. And so we were buddied up together. It means that when you go diving, you normally have a buddy so that you can check each other. Okay. And so we buddied up together, so we got to know each other, and then we spent there 2 weeks. We became friends, and obviously there was some kind of attraction on both sides. We kept in touch by letters. It sounds archaic now, but yes, by letters. And then when I finished my contract there, I came to visit him in London because he used to live in London. And so, the friendship or the acquaintance became a relationship, and I decided after a month to move to UK for good, and so I did, a big step into the void, the Neil or whatever. But that's what I did. And so that's the way I came to live in UK. And then, life took over as it happened. So I stayed, then I got married, and then I got divorced, and I'm still in UK.
So what's your fearless story?
I think my fearless story, if you mean what have been my adventurous deeds, possibly, if that's what you mean,
Yes.
I think it would be, well, as I mentioned earlier, I think for me, still to this day, standing up to my parents and when I was only 16 years old and say, you know what, I'm done with religion, this is not for me. That was a pretty good, brave deed to do. And so that's possibly for me the start of being more me or trying my best to be more and more me and discovering myself, you know. Again, as you were saying, to unfold my uniqueness. And then I think the next big step was, as I just said, jumping and decided to come and live with somebody I barely knew, really, in a different country when I moved to London. And I left everything behind, in a way. And that was another big adventures and brave deed. And then with time I got acquainted with the culture, the people, the language, and done different jobs. When I eventually decided to get married, that was another brave deed because, again, I was alone in UK, so it was kind of deciding to consolidate a tie that I didn't know how it would unfold. And actually, what happened, it didn't work out. So I had again to jump again into the Neil, the unknown, and go through divorce. So that was a huge thing for me. And then reinventing myself after that, that was another super brave and adventurous.
So how did you, what did you do to reinvent yourself?
Well, to be honest, I had to think. I really think in very different ways, physically, emotionally, psychologically, and definitely spiritually, because that you are all connected, you know. And so it's like all things in life, the best one can also be the worst one. So I reached a point where I had to come out of the relationship because I felt I was dying. And so I made my decision, but still though, how do you do it? How do you reinvent yourself? Well, the first period was a very painful one where I felt lost and I didn't know what to do. And I just felt, it seemed that my life was equal pain, not knowing, uncertainty, and the rest of it. And when you go through stuff like that, that is big, it could be a bereavement, it could be many things in your life, you know. And there is a kind of dynamic of a cycle you go through. And the best thing is just to go with it, to be honest. Because you can't really force anything. And if you live every stage of it in a way, thoroughly, then it means that you can progress to the next one, to the next one, to the next one. And so what happened to me, I went into the dark night of soul, and that was amplified by the legal process, you know, living split under the same roof for 2 years. I was made redundant and work at the same time, so I had no income, and I also lost my social background, that it was linked with my working life and my marital, your married life. So I really felt alone, and then, or a specific point, I started to remember who I was before, and so I started remembering things that I used to do when I was still living in my country, when you know, before going to UK. And so I kind of reacquainted myself with parts of me that had been forgotten, or maybe I even pushed them away because I wanted to comply, you know, to mimetize myself in the new country, or a bit of everything. So, you know, there's always like during the season of the year, you know, after winter there's always a spring, and spring takes to summer. So, you know, and then the cycle goes down again through autumn and winter again, etc. So that's exactly what happened. Funnily enough, back then I wasn't really acquainted much with what happens in my body and my female cycle. I came across, I became aware of this knowledge much, much later. But if I had been knowledgeable about that back then, it would have helped me a lot.
So is that why you got into why did you get into helping females with the feminine cycle?
No, what happened was I went through a period of really exploration where I kept asking myself what I'm here for, what I'm supposed to do, because anyway, after having been made redundant at work, I knew that I had to change something because the work I was doing wasn't really satisfying me anymore. And so I felt it, you know, that a change had to come. So sometimes changes don't really come as you would like them overnight. It takes some time. And that's what definitely happened to me. During that period, I trained in neuro-linguistic programming that really helped me, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. but I wasn't aware of the menstrual awareness. What happened during that time, because I was undergoing a lot of stress, my cycle became erratic, and I understood that it was possibly caused by stress. There was nothing wrong with me, but I wanted to understand more in a way. So I expressed desire to know more about it and to be enlightened in this department, let's say in this way, but not through normal medicine, because I had been in interested in personal development, alternative medicine for a long time. So I knew that if I wanted to resolve, understand more about myself, I had to look in that direction. Okay. So in fact, something came my way a few years later, but it did come, and it happened in 2009. I received an invitation through an email in my inbox for a conference call, and the title was "With the Wisdom of Menstruation," and I thought, "Ooh, how interesting! Just perfect for me." And also, was happening on the 8th of March, which is International Women's Day, and I thought, "Ooh, what a lovely connection!" So I listened in, and I heard this lady called Alexandra Pope explaining about menstruation and how it affects the female psyche, emotion, etc. And I really got interested and hooked. And so I thought that for a week about it, and then I decided to go to her workshop. And that's what I did in March 2009. And that day, so many things became so obvious to me and clear. And so I realized also at the same time what was that piece of the jigsaw puzzle that was missing. I realized that I always had this desire to, and this empathy with other women, so I realized that I didn't want to leave it to chance for women of the future to be in a situation like mine, realizing, oh gosh, if I'd known this stuff when I was younger, I would have developed and unfolded in a totally different way. So I don't know, who would I be now? And so I thought, I have to do something about this. So I started supporting Alexandra Pope for some time, and then in 2010 I went solo. I started to do workshops, for women around this subject, because it's something that you definitely in UK, but I think also in other continents, it's taboo, or it still is taboo, or it might be taboo in certain societies more than in others. For UK, it's definitely still very much taboo. People don't tend to talk about it, and even women, to be honest. Things are changing, and I noticed in the last 2 years, 2 or 3 years, you find stuff in the press now, and I think, oh, hey, oh, thanks God. Thanks the goddess. There's some kind of change happening.
Yeah. How can men help females with the feminine cycle?
Well, should they help them? I don't know.
I mean, do females need help with the feminine cycle? I mean, it's an interesting subject, like you doing workshops, and I wanted to try and get, for those that are male that are listening, something maybe how they can be of support. Is there any support that you can suggest?
Yes, and it's a good question, actually. It's not something I'm asked very often, but the answer is yes. Men can support women, but first of all, let's say this: women have to become aware of their body first. Because if you're not aware of what's going on in your body, how can you even think of asking for support, right? And so the situation these days is still very much for many women, you know, they are not aware of what's going on in their body. So if they are not in pain, they don't pay attention. It's just one of the many non-events in their life. If, though, they are in pain every month because in different parts of the cycle or whatever might be the issue, okay, then it's a sad story because they obviously link to menstruation and the female cycle with something that is negative, sufferings, you know, it's something of a nuisance. They call it the curse here, you know, and I think it's appalling. How can you call the curse something that nature designed to make the species multiply? Nobody would be alive without it. So a bit inconsiderate to call it that way. But anyway, so first women have to become aware of what's going on. Then if they have, in case they have problem, they are in a relationship, yes, of course, they can ask for support. Just to make it clear, let's say this. When you're menstrual aware, it means that you know that your cycle is actually the whole month, and generally speaking, is composed of 4 weeks. And these 4 weeks are linked to the pre-ovulatory phase, which is the week after a woman has stopped bleeding, and then the ovulation week, which is week two, and then you have week three, which is premenstrual week, and then you have the fourth week, which is menstruation or the bleeding week. So this is as a general. So when we talk about the female cycle, it's not just the week when women bleed, also called menstruation, but it's the whole month. And I'm saying, just to make it simple, 4 weeks, but of course it depends on the woman. It can be longer, it can be shorter. And in different times of a woman's life, it will change. So also, it's the most sensitive system in a woman's body. So it means that if the woman, like it happened to me, is going through a lot of stress because of upheaval in her life, or maybe change, she has broke up in a relationship, or she's changed job, or she has moved house, or whatever, she will notice her cycle changing. Maybe skipping, or becoming short, or stopping. So anyway, this in a nutshell what happens in a woman's body, but to understand what happens in the psyche of a woman, and because of course there is always a connection between the mind and the body. So in those 4 weeks, we, as women, we experience different energies. So just to make it simple, I compare them to the season of the years, of the year, because everybody has experienced the four seasons. Even if you live in the tropics, you might have traveled in different latitudes, so you know what it is, spring, summer, autumn, and winter. So again, let's go through this, the cycle of the season. So the first one being spring, which is comparable to the pre-ovulatory phase, which is the first week after a woman has stopped bleeding. So it's comparable to spring. So it's that type of energy, very fresh, very active, very outgoing, very communicative, very positive. The second week is ovulation or ovulatory phase, which is comparable to summer. So even more active, outgoing, positive, like shining light, right? A woman says yes to everything. You know, can multitask perfectly, everything flow. So she's very social. Then the third week is the premenstrual week, which is comparable to autumn, which is like autumn, is a time when the weather starts getting rainier, cooler, grayer. So it's a state in which, a week in which the woman starts taking more notice and care about herself. So she doesn't say yes all the time anymore. She's more concerned about her projects, her things, how she feels, what she wants, what she's interested, and she starts reviewing. So it's more of a kind of less, let's call it less positive. But we know positive and negative are complementary, okay? So if in spring she has been very positive, in autumn she will be reviewing and maybe see all the things that she has missed. And so she reviews, so she is much more critical. And at the same time, she speaks her truth more. She's less politically correct or less, she does less PR, okay? And then the fourth week, the fourth season is winter. And like in winter, it's low energy season. The woman experiences much more of an energy of hibernating, sleeping more, longer, wanting to be on her own. It's a meditative time. So, don't ask her out or ask her to organize a dinner party. It's the wrong time.
So guys, I guess from that, the advice is the fourth week, avoid and be careful.
Well, no, that's the thing. And I'm speaking for men right now. You see, when if men know this pattern and are in a relationship, so of course they might. I'm saying of course, but hopefully it's a good intimate relationship where there is lots of communication. And they know where the partner is at in their cycle. They have a better understanding, very simplified, but it doesn't matter. Everything that is simple is useful and easy to use. So they have a simplified idea of where the woman is at. So it means like in a relationship, you might be wanting to go or plan a holiday. So you might think that it's much better to have a holiday with your partner if she's in spring or summer, especially if it's an adventure holiday, okay? Rather than take her on a holiday when she's in autumn or winter. Why? Because she might feel more inclined to be on her own, so she might not feel like going rafting or ice climbing or things like that. But this is applicable in every area of your life, so at work it can be very useful because women do tend to, even if they are unaware of it, they tend to go through this pattern. So if you want maybe schedule a business meeting or a business event or something like that, and you have lots of women, obviously you can't cater for all of them, you don't know. But the organizer, at least if they are in the spring or summer season, they might find it much easier, to deal with lots of people or organize an event in that type of energy, which is very outgoing and social and energetic, rather than if they are in autumn or winter when, women tend to have their own agenda, and rightly so. But just to spare a word for nature, nature, as we know, is kind of have a high success rate of few billions of years. And if you look at it on a subtler level, deeper level, you can really see how complementary and how this cycle is sustainable. Why? Because you have 2 weeks of pushing in a way, exerting, and then you have 2 weeks or more of lower energy, so more resting, recuperating, like the seasons,
Yeah, it's a nice analogy how you give with the seasons. So I guess, so it's not the feminine cycle, it's not just for, it's not just for the females to be aware, but it's also for the guys to be aware of their female partners, so that way they can better understand how what the what their partner's going through, right?
Yes, also you have to consider it's not just for intimate relationship because, men have they can't escape women, right? So first of all, they are born from a woman. So not knowing anything of all this, they dealt with their mom. So if the mother was having problems with her menstrual cycle, maybe unconsciously might made up that. At a certain time of the month, the mother was going bananas, crazy, and maybe very snappy, So they might grow up with this thing that is normal to have to put up with something like that, which is not, because it doesn't have to be that way. But also, then men might have sisters, and it's just, millions of examples might pop up in everybody's mind, dealing with your sister, maybe it was troublesome, Then you go to school. When you go to school, you have obviously, well, it depends. In UK, some schools are divided, just boys and girls, but otherwise, all my school years were in mixed classes, so you always have, boys dealing with girls, So,
Yeah, well, it depends. Yeah, it depends where you are, because there's private schools, there's public schools. Most schools have mixed, and even when people go to university, so it's a great subject, the feminine cycle, and I think and I really applaud you for going out there and being like a forefront runner of educating females and males on the feminine cycle. Now, I would like to go on to the subject of this wonderful book that I had the chance to read that you wrote, called Antarctica Odyssey: A New Beginning. And so first of all, why did you go to Antarctica?
Okay, I went to Antarctica in 2008, and let's just go back a year just to set the scene so everybody can understand better. I mentioned earlier that I went through divorce, and it was kind of a longish one. Well, when there are legalities, it's always tend to get longer and longer. But anyway, it was a couple of years. So I finished in 2007, and soon after I went to an event and found out about this chap from Australia called Peter Bland, who was taking people to Antarctica. And the purpose of taking people to Antarctica was to face fears and limiting beliefs. So as a just qualified and trained in neuro-linguistic programming, for me it was very appealing because it's all about the mind, how you use the mind, you communicate, get to know your unconscious, to get your goals going and reach your goals, your targets, and all these type of things. So I thought, oh wow, this is really intriguing. And also the fact that Peter Bland had been himself to the North and South Pole, so he had already been to Antarctica, and we weren't going to the South Pole, but he had been there for those reasons, and then he decided to start taking people to Antarctica because he fell in love with the place, as I think anybody who goes there does, or I definitely did. Anyway, so I thought, I have to go. I can't miss this opportunity. And also, I was really distraught and in pieces, so I needed to reconnect with my spirit and finding out again who Gabriella was or wanted to be. So I thought, I love traveling, first of all, and that would have been a destination that I would never planned to go to, too cold. And so I thought, oh, it's a challenge, and I like the idea of facing the challenge, and I like the idea of putting myself in an environment totally different to anything I could think of. And so I thought, oh, this I have to do this. Also, the other fact for me that was irresistible, it was the fact that Antarctica is possibly one of the few places on Earth where nature is still pretty pristine. We haven't managed yet to destroy it, and I really hope we won't. But anyway, so that was a big appeal for me. And so I decided to go. And also I knew that I would get some money after the divorce. And instead of, you know, thinking, oh, I should invest this, or I should, you know, I wanted to pay back my spirit. So I really didn't rationalize it too much. I went for it. I just listened to my heart and I went for it. There was a gap of 9 months between the time when I signed up for this and when I went. I signed up in June 2007 and I traveled there in March 2008. And those 9 months, they were quite quirky, to say the least, and challenging, because my mind was going... you know, was racing. I didn't know what would happen, and I started obviously reflecting upon my decision, if it would be the right one or not, etc. It was all part of the process, obviously. And I talk about all this in my book, but my plan, it wasn't to write a book at all. It was just to go there, see what would happen to Gabriella, and see if I could... you know, find peace, my heart again, and that was it. And then soon before leaving for Antarctica and South America, I decided that I wanted to film, and because I thought, you know, this is such an opportunity, not many people might have such an opportunity in their life, so I thought, what could I do that to bring back something, you know, that can help others, not just me? And so I thought, if I film, because of the nature of filming, you know, it's quite involving. I like videos anyway, I like films, etc. So I thought, oh, that would be really powerful. And so I didn't have funds to, you know, to go with other people and pay other people to film or anything like it. But so I decided that the quick way, you know, I just bought myself a camcorder, a new camera, and off I went. And then the unpredictable happened in Antarctica, and so I came back with very little footage, and I ended up 3 years later to write a book.
So, how did you prepare yourself for going to Antarctica, and what challenges did you need to overcome getting there?
Well, before, as I was mentioning the 9 months, the diabolic 9 months, it was really to keep in check my mind. I did start jogging, and I did yoga regularly. I paid lots of attention to my diet, so I normally eat quite well, but I tried my best to even be more strict and, you know, to be in good shape. Because I didn't really know what would happen. I knew that wouldn't be such a challenging thing for me, possibly physically. I knew that. Because I always been a bit of an athletic type of person physically, so I knew that even if I would have to try something new like ice climbing, it wouldn't be that challenging for me. But I also knew that, having set the intention to go and the purpose of it was to face my fears, I knew that obviously something would happen to challenge me, you know, to test me. That's what happens when we have an intention. It happens.
Yeah.
So it was to deal during those 9 months dealing with the unknown. That was the big challenge. Then, in a way, when the trip in itself approached, it was liberating, because is always the anticipation of anything that kills you, you know? It's the fear of the fear that kills you. So when then you go and do something, then it becomes much easier than you think it would be. And so when I was on the trip in itself, yes, I did. I had few challenges happening, but for me they were mainly emotional challenges and psychological. So I was tested more in that way rather than the environment. Of course, it's harsh. It's just the way it is. It's the coldest and driest, windiest place on earth. And of course, we went there. It was summer, end of summer. So obviously, it's the best possible season to go. But it's still, you know, and we were on a ship, so we were based on the ship, so it wasn't like kind of having to deal with the elements 24/7 at all. But it doesn't matter, because the moment you are on the deck of the ship, the moment you go on land, you know, you realize that even if you have all your layers on, it's always not enough, you know. So, for instance, and then... for me, ice climbing itself, it wasn't a big challenge. I loved it. I loved kayaking. But for instance, night camping on the ice, that was super challenging. Because even if we had tents and we had very thick and I suppose sleeping bags for the Arctic or the Antarctic climate. So it still wasn't enough for me. I couldn't sleep because it was so cold. So that in itself, it was a kind of interesting experience. For me, though, it became a very mystical experience because I couldn't sleep, and so it was like kind of communing with nature in a level that obviously you can't do in your own bed. And it's very different in your sleeping bag on ice, which is only a couple of centimeters below you. And you only have a little thin fabric between you and the rest of the world. And you hear all these noises. Unlike what everybody might think, it's not a silent place at all because of the ice carving, which means the ice moving and collapsing into the sea and etc. is very noisy. So I was there. I was in my little tent and in my little sleeping bag with all these noises that they were so loud, and I didn't know where they were. So it's kind of disheartening, right? A bit daunting. You don't know what is going to happen. You know that above yourself there's nothing, but...
Isn't that true about life? You don't really know what's happening until things happen?
Yes, exactly. But like, there was another remarkable experience that for me, because I was just talking about communing with nature, you know, for me it was really touching. I lost my gear, so my main pleasure was taken away from me all of a sudden because I couldn't film, I couldn't take pictures, and I was really distraught, and I went into a trauma that basically lasted most of the trip. But anyway, for me, the witnessing, being in the presence of nature was amazing. So... One day I was in a dinghy waiting to go on land, and I was waiting with Peter Bland for another member who was running a bit late, okay? So we both were sitting in this dinghy next to the ship, and I was just looking at the sea below me. A dinghy is a small little boat, right, that you can also use those type of boats when you go diving or for rescue, you know, it's an inflatable boat. So you can see the water, obviously, you can touch the water because you just have to pull out your arm and there it is in the water, right? So you're very close. I was just looking into the water. And I remember thinking, oh, it would be lovely if I could see a whale, because so far I hadn't seen one. It seemed everybody saw them except me. And so I just saw that without paying too much attention. And you can imagine what happened to me when a few minutes later I saw this whale coming out, coming to the surface next to the dinghy. And it came so close that for a moment I could see its eye. I looked into a whale's eye. Of course, it was very brief. I was so taken aback. I was speechless. I think I stopped breathing for some time. It was so moving. I will never forget it.
Why did you write the book about your experiences, and what did you hope people can get out of it?
Well, what happened was my main goal was to produce a documentary, but then I came back and realized I didn't have enough footage, and I didn't know what to do really. And I kept trying to look for people that could help me, but nothing was really moving. And so 3 years later, it just came to me, that I could just write a book, because I didn't have to abandon my original dream. But if I wrote a book, at least I could give something to somebody to read it and understand what actually was being there, going to Antarctica, etc. And so I thought, oh, okay, it seems a good idea. And so I went away and I wrote the book in 2 weeks. And what I put in it is in the form of a blog, not a blog, like a diary, that follows the days and what happens during the different days. But what I done in it, I really poured my soul and I really put everything that came to mind, or all those quirky thoughts and feelings that we all have, but cannot, we prefer to keep to ourselves because they can be embarrassing, they can be, too intimate, whatever. And so I really tried to put in my essence and everything that I learned in the 3 years after I came back. And my hope was to, by sharing all this, it was to, give the chance to other people that maybe they have not been in similar situation, but life experiences, they are similar. So, you can learn laterally through other people's experiences. And so the purpose of being so honest and raw and not politically correct is to just say as it is, and hoping that whoever reads the book might find in it some nuggets, that some inspiration, some insights that can be useful for them in their life.
Yeah, I had the chance to, as I said earlier, I had the chance to read your book, and it was a great inspiration. I think your book also is a true testament on how you embrace your uniqueness on this journey, we only have we've almost come close to the end of this wonderful interview, could you tell people where they can find you and where they can get your book, Antarctica Odyssey, A New Beginning?
Yes, they can find me on my website, which is called flyinginspiration.com. Flying, FLYING, and inspiration, like having an inspiration, in one word, .com. And they can find a tab called My Book, and they can click there, and they can find all sorts of articles, videos. They have the link to Amazon, to Nook, to Kobo, and also to the Endless Bookcase, which is the publisher's website, where it's also available. And it's available now not only as an ebook, but it's also available as a printed book, but only on Amazon. And so, yes, the best way to find out more about it, the weird adventure of Gabriella Guglielmino Trivel in Antarctica, is to go to flyinginspiration.com.
And are you on social media, and where can people find you?
Yes, I'm on social media. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and other social media. And they can find all the links also on my website, flyinginspiration.com, on the page Contact Me. And they can contact me through that page, sending me a message directly. And also they have all the different logos of the different social media, and they just need to click on it and they can connect with me. Easy.
Embrace your uniqueness. That is what this is all about. Thank you, Gabriella, for sharing your experiences of embracing your uniqueness, sharing about your wonderful adventure in Antarctica. Do check her book out, Antarctica Odyssey, A New Beginning, and catch her on her website, flyinginspiration.com. I certainly learned a lot. I hope you, the listeners, have learned a lot. Thank you for joining me. I'm actor Andrew Mondia. I would like to thank my producer at caregiverstory.com and Why Wait Station, Carolyn A. Brent. Now, if you want to get a hold of me, I am on social media. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Mondia. The Twitter hashtag to use is #EmbraceUniqueness. I'm also on Facebook, LinkedIn, or my own website, AndrewMondia.com, AndrewMondia.com. If you'd like to email me with comments, questions, or you'd like to be a guest on my show, I'm more than happy to hear from you. You can write to me at info@AndrewMondia.com. Now, before we depart, until next time, I would like to leave you with a quote from the wonderful Walt Disney. The more you like yourself, the less you are like anyone else, which makes you unique. Have yourself a wonderful, unique rest of the day, and I will see you next time. And thank you for joining me here on Embrace Your Uniqueness.
Everyone has a story to tell. Take John. He can see all the films he wants, whenever he wants, at Cineworld. From Captain America Civil War to Bad Neighbours 2. He gets 10% off all his cinema snacks. Fresh popcorn, Tango Ice Blast, you name it. Plus 25% off at some of his favourite restaurants, like Pizza Hut. That's John's unlimited story. Start yours today when you join Cineworld Unlimited from just $16.90 a month. Love cinema? Join the club. Sign up today at cineworld.com.